Welcome to Lightning Bug, a celebration of grassroots progressive politics in rural Pennsylvania. We stand for the protection of all people, the environment, and the rights enshrined in our Constitution. We support an informed citizenry and equal opportunity for all to achieve the American dream. We as constituents will hold our elected officials accountable. We are committed to equality, inclusion, acceptance, and fairness. We are lights in the night. We are hope for our future. We are not alone. We are Lightning Bug. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lightning Bug. I'm Dwayne Heisler.
I'm Nathan Lund.
And I'm Jessica Britton. How's everybody doing today?
I'm doing all right. I wish for some better decisions in the Supreme Court, but
I think we all wish for better decisions from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, or maybe better laws.
Better laws would be great.
I like that even better.
Legislature to make sure that the Supreme Court does the job that it needs to do and that the intent of these things are really looked at, I think.
I like it. Give them some better laws to uphold.
Yeah, but I mean, that would mean actually doing work when you go to Congress. And
crazy concept.
Right.
Yeah. And
we don't do that.
Actually, like having the interests of the people in mind.
Right. A little accountability on our part, too, at the ballot box.
Well, yes, absolutely.
And I think we can all agree that we would be having a very different conversation today if Justice Merrick Garland was on the court.
Much different.
Right. So that comes into play as well.
So today is June 27th, and we've had a crazy week of court decisions. And today, about an hour and a half ago at 10 o'clock, or around there, there was an announcement from the Supreme Court, which was not unexpected. We've talked about it many times here, the Janus decision by the Supreme Court, which was right along the lines that we thought.
Yep.
You know, it was a one vote, you know, over the line kind of thing. And so basically this affects public sector jobs and kind of eliminates the fair share portion of dues. And so just a quick explanation of that, when a union is in a place, everyone is expected to pay their fair share because the union negotiates on behalf of everyone for safety issues, for wages, for benefits, and those things. However, that fair share can't be used for political purposes. And in the Janus case from Illinois, they were making the claim that, well, when the union negotiates for salaries and safety and things that are important in the workplace, like benefits and things like that, that they actually are doing political work. And so this has been, you know, in the courts for quite a number of times, but this was predicted to go this way because of how the court is currently stacked.
Yes.
Because of preventing President Obama from having a choice.
Absolutely.
Of appointing someone. So thank you, Mitch McConnell. Right.
Absolutely.
Oh, and he's so proud of that. He says that's the biggest thing that he's done.
To undermine.
Yep. To undermine the appointment by Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and there's a reason that you look at all of the evangelicals and all of the corporations who may not have necessarily supported a Trump presidency. This right here, all of these conversations that we're going to have today are what gathered support for him because it changes the whole makeup of the court. And it makes for decisions like this where you've got someone who has been consistently opposed to labor and the rights of workers on the court now. That's what made this happen.
I feel so weird about this because when that was happening, when that seat was being stolen, when that was happening, I was like, this is big. This is really big. But, you know, I didn't really realize it. And I almost hear myself telling myself, told you so. Like, because it almost doesn't feel like this is really bad. Like, these decisions that have come up, and the other ones we're going to talk about as well. These decisions have come up, and these are the consequences. And I was like, these will be the consequences. But I guess there was a part of me that really believed, like,
maybe it'll be okay.
Yeah, like that maybe there would be someone who could see this for what it is, all three of these, for what it is.
Right.
Because I just keep on thinking that this is nothing but the window dressing. In all of these cases, it's nothing but technicalities. It's nothing but, you know, it has nothing to do with the intent behind it, which is evil.
Right.
Right.
And that's part of why I think that the law portion is important. Putting people in place who are going to create laws that aren't so ambiguous, because if you don't leave room for judicial interpretation to afford these decisions, then you don't have these decisions in right. the future.
Right. And it's important to do that on every level, because exactly. these are state and federal laws that we're looking at, so it has to happen on every single level. And that just goes to the importance of electing people. You know, we're in Pennsylvania, our legislature is all kinds of red, and we need to change that, or stuff like this. It goes back to the bench. You have people on the state level in the courts and in the legislatures, and then this is what ends up happening.
Exactly.
So you know, with this ruling happening in defiance, union members, actually people who support them too, anyone who supports working families, because mm-hmm. we know that when a union goes in, that the salaries of everyone goes up, the salaries of everyone, and the in states that have collective bargaining,
yes.
you know, whether you're union or not, you know, no one joins a union to make less money or to have less benefits or to have safer, you know, or less safe right. working conditions. And
yeah, and employers who are employing non-union members are businesses that don't even have a union contingency at all. They have to compete with those jobs, which right. means they have to offer those higher wages, those better benefits. So it really does lift all ships when you have unions.
So won't corporations, out of the kindness of their hearts with record profits, just take care of their employees?
I think that's what
sure.
we've seen in the past,
that's
right?
That's always what yeah. happens.
No bonuses for CEOs. Really well. Just trickle that money on down.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah. So, well, let's look at that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's been happening? We had that amazing tax cut, right?
Well,
and how has that helped the American
cuts
worker?
Are for the American people, Dwayne, don't forget, that's what Paul Ryan said, and he would never lie.
Right. It's a tax break for everybody, but it's heavily weighted on the top. Some people are saying that they only see about $20 extra over the course of an entire year from their tax break. I don't know what you can buy with that. I don't know what kind of spending power that gets you.
Yeah.
So, but the corporations got billions.
Exactly.
Yep.
And what did they do with that?
Did not give it to their workers.
Nope.
So they...
Oh, but didn't someone get a $1,000, like, bonus?
Some people did, but... That doesn't
How far is
really,
that even going to get you?
Yeah, that doesn't really justify...
So what did they do with the rest of their money?
Oh, they pumped it right back into their... Their, you know, CEOs
and
their
stock buybacks, so then that way they can get higher dividends, and it just makes sense. The rich get richer is really one of those unwritten political rules.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
Right. So, in defiance of this decision, people are doing the Norma Rae challenge from that famous film in the 80s, I think.
I'm
not even sure.
80s.
Where Sally Fields holds up a sign, you know, and it says union on it. And you can just take a piece of cardboard and a Sharpie or, you know, some lipstick if you want, I don't care,
right.
and write the word, write hashtag union on it, hold it up, take a selfie, and post it on Facebook, on social media, on Instagram. Tweet it and show your support for working families, that America needs unions. We need people to do collective bargaining work. We need people to look out, because otherwise it's the corporations, and we see how that works.
Yeah, corporations are not looking out for the average Americans, so
right.
the unions are.
Right. That's right.
So I challenge you to, and this is going to be going on for quite some time, I'm sure, because
yes.
this is going to have repercussions, to do that now if you can, to find a sheet of paper, or, you know, maybe stand up on your desk if you're at the office.
Okay. I'm just going to climb up on this table here real quick.
We're all climbing on the table now. Oh my gosh. This is a very small table, by the way.
Guys, it's not going to go well. Send help.
What could go wrong, right? Send help, please. Yes.
It's not going to go well.
If we don't have another podcast, we'll know what happened.
And this is our final episode of Light. No, just kidding.
So I hope we have health insurance, right?
Oh,
right.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is. Well, speaking of medical.
Speaking of medical.
Jess, maybe you can talk a little bit about what happened yesterday.
Oh, I could talk for hours and hours and hours about it, but we won't do that. So in a case basically stating that... The question was whether or not, and I am using giant air quotes here, faith-based pregnancy centers, which are also known as crisis pregnancy centers, are allowed to decline to tell their patients, their incoming patients,
right,
about all of their medical options. That's what it comes down to. Medical options including, could anybody guess?
Right.
Abortion.
Oh my gosh, you guys are so smart.
You can't talk about it.
Yeah, you can't talk about it. So you're dealing with a very vulnerable set of women coming into these places looking for genuine medical advice and medical care. And they are then told that no, RU486, which is the abortion pill, is not an option, that surgical abortion is not an option. None of those options are given to them. These are also the same types of places who usually won't hand out Plan B or refer anyone to where they can get Plan B. If they're within that 72-hour time frame. And you look at the fact that in the medical profession, the goal is do no harm, help people make the best medical decisions.
Informed medical decisions. Yes.
For themselves. And when you have people who are, like, when you have these clinics that are just telling people, well, this is your only option. Your only option is to carry the baby to term. The only option is to have this child, whether you are equipped to do so, whether you are mentally and emotionally prepared to do so. And after that, then we've seen the issues with the pro-life movement. It's like, well, why'd you have all these kids? And why do you need help taking care of the kids?
So I have a question. What if the mother's life is in danger?
Yeah, well, that's always the question, right? You know, and that's the issue. Well, you have to save the fetus. That's always the argument in these things. It's being presented as a restriction on free speech,
right,
which I don't understand any legal justification for how that can be the case when you are 1000% talking about medical advice and presenting all of the medical options if you are a medical provider.
Right. And I have
a doctor.
Exactly, from a doctor or a nurse. Yep.
Yeah. I have an analogy, and it might seem a little flippant to use this, but barbers have to get licenses, right? In order to do what they want to do at their place.
I think I know where you're going with this,
so
I love it.
There's a Sikh population that doesn't believe in trimming any facial hair and cutting your hair in anything. So they go to the barbershop licensing board and they say, oh, I want to be able to advise people on what options they can have for their hair care, for cutting it and doing all this. So are they, should they be allowed to get licenses to be the arbiter of what you do with your hair when they're only going to tell you that you can't cut it. Yeah, you can't touch it. Because that's essentially what's happening here.
Yeah.
If you go to that board, they're going to say, that's fine, you can advise people on what to do, but you're not going to be a barber while you're doing that. Same thing with this, you're not going to be a medical advisor when you're not giving people the full menu of options offered to them medically.
Exactly, wow. And this is just an aside, but...
Do you go to one of those places? His beard touches his knees.
It's really long, you guys. When he was up on the table, it was all the way down on the floor.
I thought he was going to step on it.
Yeah.
I know, I need to clean up, what can I say?
It's, you know, we'll head to the barbershop after we're done, okay?
Okay, not the Sikh one.
Not the Sikh one.
Right.
No, I thought where you're going with that was just, can barbers tell people not to get bad haircuts? But...
Right.
You went a whole way more intelligent.
Well, I wanted to go faith-based with it would be like a closer analogy.
It's good.
Thank you.
You know, I think just the, and I could, anybody who's ever heard me speak knows I could do a whole rant on this, but the hypocrisy of the fact that it was Clarence Thomas who wrote for the majority, who is a known abuser of women, who is unfit to be a Supreme Court justice in the first place. It just goes to, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg famously was asked, you know, when will there be enough women on the court? And she said, when there are nine.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one ever batted an eye when there were nine men. Like, people don't understand. Like, these are people who are not looking out for the best interests of the patients. This is about patient care.
Mm-hmm. Patient advice
that is being totally tossed aside because of what is being called free speech, where it's like you shouldn't be in the medical profession if you're not willing to offer all of the medical options.
Right.
Well, I mean, can we, and you're good at this, Nathan, can we talk about other religions that don't allow you to take medical options? Where does that line draw? You know, like,
there are plenty of them. You don't want a religion that's opposed to any type of surgery or any type of medical intervention to be the ones advising you on what surgeries you should get when absolutely. They're necessary to sustain your life.
But isn't that what we're doing?
Yeah. Essentially, in this case, we are.
Yep.
Yeah.
So...
And that goes against precedent as far as medical advisors for things like surgery. For some reason, we set this aside, even though it's a constitutional procedure that you're
in. Even though it's a medical procedure.
Now, obviously, if the patient has some kind of religious belief and they don't want something done for religious purposes,
can't force it on them.
Right.
That's
right.
Their
but yet
free exercise.
We are actually forcing a religious belief on them, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Essentially. Yep.
100%.
So we want to make sure that we can't force anyone's religion on them because we're forcing religion on them.
Right. Yep. That's how a lot of these religious right?
so
debates go.
I'm confused for a second, but yes.
But you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, if I were religious, if I were a Sikh, and I said, you know, don't cut my hair, but someone else said, oh, well, for religious purposes, you must
right.
have a trimmed beard,
yeah.
and that's what the court says.
Yep.
So
right.
I would have to go with that information. That right. would be what I... The only way that you can actually solve your hair problem is to have it shaved.
Yeah.
One of the other reasons that this is such a big deal, too, is that we've had abortion access limited so much in so many states that in a lot of places these crisis centers are the only place where
right.
they can
yes.
get any kind of family planning advice, which means that there's like this sin of omission to where people get the idea that that's all
yes.
that's open to them.
And I think that there's, you know, and it takes the agency away from the women who are seeking this care as well, because no one in their right mind thinks like, oh, if you present abortion as an option to every single woman, every single woman's going to line up and go get an abortion. That's not how it works. But what women need is accurate and complete medical advice and medical options, or they cannot make informed decisions for themselves, for their families, and for their own futures.
But they're not concerned about what women
well,
need.
Of course not.
No.
That's very obvious, unfortunately.
Right.
But here we are. So to wrap that up, because we're seeing a lot of this at the same time, as Nathan pointed out, that we're seeing, you know, clinics like this popping up all over the place. There's one right here in Bloomsburg. You're seeing restricted access to abortion services and contraceptive services all over the place. So support local family planning places. Support.
So do you think this local one in Bloomsburg will actually now start following this advice? Will they actually? So if someone here in Columbia County goes to this clinic in Bloomsburg,
mm-hmm.
that they won't hear all those other options.
Oh, they already are.
They already are doing
they
that.
They already are.
So is the public really aware of that?
I don't think so. And
so
what we can do about it is support Columbia Montour Family Health as much as humanly possible, because that is a legitimate family planning option. And there is another one, and I don't even want to say the name, but here we are, that definitely does not, and that definitely is promoting an ideology and not accurate medical care.
Wow. Wow.
So
it would be different, I think, if they build themselves accurately. If they just said
right.
that we are this faith-based institution and you should only come if you already subscribe to this faith.
Exactly.
That's a different thing. That's like going to church to get advice on this stuff.
Yeah,
but
right.
when you're going to
right.
someone who just says family planning on the outside,
yeah.
how are you supposed to know
right.
what
so
kind of
deceitful.
Ideology you're buying?
Well,
it
and,
is,
and
that's a
the place locally, and I don't know whether or not we should even list the name of it, but it basically, you know, took the wording and the framing from the pro-choice movement and wrapped it up in what they're trying to offer, and it's so deceptive and so manipulative, and I get very emotional about this issue, but it's when you have a population in this area that is economically depressed, when you have 9,000 college students, over half of whom are female, and this is presented as an option, as a good option, where you're going to get all of your choices, just, it disgusts me. It absolutely disgusts me, mm-hmm. because it's nothing but judgment, and it's nothing but forcing your own beliefs as opposed to going somewhere like, and again, shout out Columbia Montour Family Health,
yeah,
where you get actual options and actual care based on what is best for you in your situation. Right. So I think we just have to constantly be supporting Planned Parenthood and local clinics like Columbia Montour Family Health, because this is what they're facing every single day.
So it doesn't get any better with our third topic today, which is the president's Muslim ban.
Yes.
You know, that's probably the easiest way to talk about it,
I guess.
Yep. And I would like to read for you just the first paragraph in the last part of Sonia Sotomayor's dissent with the decision, which once again was a 5-4,
yeah.
That basically upheld the president's authority to do what he did. Okay,
right.
So here's the first paragraph of the dissent. The United States of America is a nation built upon the promise of religious liberty. Our founders honored that core promise by embedding the principles of religious neutrality in the First Amendment. The court's decision today fails to safeguard that fundamental principle. It leaves undisturbed a policy first advertised openly and unequivocally as, quote, total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, because the policy now masquerades behind a facade of national security concerns. But this repackaging does little to cleanse the presidential proclamation of the appearance of discrimination that the president's words have created. Based on the evidence in the record, a reasonable observer would conclude that the proclamation was motivated by anti-Muslim animus. That alone suffices to show that plaintiffs are likely to succeed on the merits of their Establishment Clause claim. The majority holds otherwise by ignoring the facts, misconstruing the legal precedent, and turning a blind eye to the pain and suffering the proclamation inflicts on countless families and individuals, many of whom are citizens of the United States. Because that troubling result runs contrary to the Constitution and our precedent, I dissent. Not I respectfully dissent, but I just dissent. And then the final bit, because this is like 28, 29 pages long.
Yeah.
In the intervening years since Korematsu, and we'll talk a little bit about what that is, our nation has done much to leave its sordid legacy behind. Today, the court takes the important step of finally overruling Korematsu, denouncing it as, quote, gravely wrong the day it was decided. This formal repudiation of a shameful precedent is laudable and long overdue. It does not make the majority's decision here acceptable or right. By blindly accepting the government's misguided invitation to sanction a discriminatory policy motivated by animosity towards a favored group, all in the name of a superficial claim of national security, the court redeploys the same dangerous logic underlying Korematsu and merely replaces one, quote, gravely wrong decision with another. Our Constitution demands, our country deserves, a judiciary willing to hold the coordinate branches to account when they defy our most sacred legal commitments. Because the court's decision today has failed in that respect, with profound regret, I dissent. So, pretty powerful words there from Sotomayor.
Yes.
So, what are our thoughts around it? Maybe we should explain a little bit of Korematsu.
Yeah, contextualize that.
Yeah,
that was from back during, back during Japanese internment. He was one of the people who said, like, I do not want to be interned. So his,
right.
his court
Japanese
is,
descent.
Yeah, so,
citizen.
Right. So it makes it up to the Supreme Court, and the decision was made on false pretenses, because recently there were documents found from back in the day that
40
were
years ago
that were hidden, and it shows that the legal justification for it, that there was a national security concern specifically with Japanese people living in this country, it was based on a lot of racism, just to be blunt about
yeah.
it, because they were saying that people who were Japanese had like a racial inclination towards deceit and spying and all these things. So
right.
that
and
would have been...
this was a nation that was just living in fear because of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And that was used to justify... Right.
And for a long time, they haven't been using this... Their decision on Japanese internment is precedent for anything.
Right.
Which is fine... But that's just, that's dicta. That's right. not something that you can actually cite as precedent.
Yes.
Not citing something is not the same as denouncing it, and this repudiation is that.
Yes.
Isn't it always safety and security, though? Like, it's our fears, right?
Always.
Oh, don't, absolutely.
I mean, don't we, aren't we smarter than that?
I thought so until 2016. Real talk. How do we avoid, it, just going back, and we're going to get into the merits of the case. How do we keep any of this from happening?
Yeah.
Vote for better people.
Right.
It all comes back to square one every time.
Yeah. We also just have to have these conversations when it comes to any of these issues, really, because people
But we're not supposed to talk about politics.
Right. Oh crap. That old one. Don't talk about politics or religion, and we've talked about both.
And we don't know anything about either.
Right.
No.
As a country.
And I think that if we did discuss these things more, then it would be easier to hold people to account. Because right now we don't even know how the people who we think that we align with feel about these issues.
Yeah. I don't disagree. But I think it's important to say thoughtful discussion.
Right.
And not shouting and not social media and any of that, because then you just get into the worst of the worst on both sides, really.
Right. Because this is a broader issue. I'm glad that you said the thing about security as being like this scapegoat. Like, it just gives you carte blanche to do whatever you want as the executive.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change because the president decides, you know what? I think I want to give up some of my executive power. That's not going to happen. He's not going to wake up one day.
Really?
And this is on
especially
both sides.
This one.
Yeah. When you even look at under Obama, and this will be me being fair for a bit. So,
yeah.
So
no,
he,
I know where you're going.
Yeah. As an executive, he did some things that it didn't at all take away powers from the executive. He had kill lists. He had things that as progressives we find abhorrent. And he did that. They called him deporter-in-chief at a certain point during his presidency. I don't think that it should be up to the executive and their whim and their whimsy to decide, oh, hey, this is how I feel today and this is what I'm going to do.
But it appears that it is.
Right, which is why, broken record, we need to get people in power who are going to seize some of that power back, because they're not going to cede it themselves.
Right. And I think, I think it goes back to, we can have a discussion where any of us would, I think, I'm assuming, any of us would look at the Muslim ban as it came about a year and a half ago and like, horrified and disgusted that this was my government putting these policies in place.
Well, remember all the people showing
up
absolutely. At the airports.
You talk about
Bob Casey.
Stunning, stunning activism instantly.
Right.
Instantly when that came down.
By the way, let's give Casey a shout out. One of the first tweets I saw today, this morning, was him holding a union sign.
Oh, nice.
Thank you, Bob Casey.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. But go ahead.
It's important. And, Casey has been
up there, right?
supportive in most of these cases. And we look at... We look at what happened then and we say, okay, this is not all right. We are not okay with this. This decision isn't maybe as clear cut as we may think it is,
right?
Because of the legal justification for the policies put in place. So what does that mean? That means we need better laws. We need better laws that are more defined, that are more limiting, again, to the executives, so that these things can't happen. Because even in the majority and the concurring opinions, there was no justification. There was no endorsement of the policy.
Right.
The argument, and by noted liberal John Roberts, not so much.
Right.
But the argument was basically, this is not an endorsement of the policy, but if it's going to be challenged, it has to be challenged better, and there has to be a better law in place.
But why do I feel like you're just slapping the hand as it still reaches in for the cookie? You know, like...
Oh,
you know,
I don't disagree with
you there. You know, it's like, yeah, blah, 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 but, have your cookie anyway.
I think
there just seems to be something really wrong.
Oh, it's right. All.
As a Supreme Court justice, you're setting precedent for the whole nation and precedent for future litigation. So I think that they should have a conservative, small-c conservative view of their rulings going into the past and into the future.
Right.
They should always try to have as narrow of a ruling as they can that are on the merits of the specific case that's
one
before
case.
Them. If they do have to have broader implications for other laws, that should be limited to their scope, which is interpreting things against the Constitution.
Right.
And
so do you think that this strengthens our democracy? Because we are taking that narrow view and we are constraining ourselves to what's before us on the table. Are those going to be the last word? Is that going to be on our tombstone of democracy?
No. It doesn't make us any stronger as a democracy, but I don't think that they were acting outside of their purview in deciding the way that they did.
I'm gonna.
That's
go.
A really tough question.
I'm gonna go ahead.
Aren't you answering for all millennials right now?
Yeah,
that's
I'm sorry, I threw that out there.
No,
but it's just okay. Because I mean, this is one of the reasons I think I'm in the funk I am today.
I am thinking about that.
I see this as like democracy just like scraping and crawling its way, trying not to go into the grave. And it just seems to be one decision after another that is just. And then you hear the craziness in the background of. I mean, look at all the stuff that we've heard about this. They shouldn't be coming to the border. What are they bringing?
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
it's all the same hate that we have
that's compounding all this, which is lifted up by our president.
Right. And I 100% agree with you about everything that you just said. But here's where I try to take a slightly more optimistic view. What has been the response to any of these things? Thousands of people showing up at the airports to help these people who were stuck when this came down. How many people were demonstrating in the last 2 days for not just one of these issues, for all of them? Look how many people we had show up in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, for all of these things. So I think what you're seeing in it, and listen,
what about the president's approval rating though? So, you know, there's the other side of the coin,
too.
That is important.
And when it's people...
I agree with you. Those things give me hope. But,
Do you think, and this I'm asking, I'm throwing this out there.
Yeah.
Do you think the average American citizen, we are hyper aware of what's going on, understands what he's doing?
No.
And pays attention to what he's doing. I don't disagree with you at all, but...
But I think we have to realize that that is the case, and I don't know how that changes. Like, we're doing all the things to try and make a change, and that approval rating still stays right there.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the work that we've been doing over the past year and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
And still that rating's right there.
Yeah. But that's been
And then let's look at our turnout in the primary.
Right.
I don't care how many people have shown up, thousands of people at the airport. Where the fuck were they on election day?
No, I don't disagree with you. Go ahead, Nate.
Realistically, those people do show up at the polls, those same people, but you have two extremes that are the loudest bits, and they're also just vocal minorities. They're not a majority on either side. The majority of people do denounce these things, but you could argue, which I think you kind of are, Dwayne, that it's not a big enough majority of people. When you look at these detainment centers and like the tender care facilities, those kinds of things, they had I think 70% of people against them. But that means that 30% of people looked at that and they thought, oh, that's okay. So it's not enough of a reaction.
Oh, absolutely.
From
and I think, the discussion, looking at it from a data standpoint, the discussion has been from basically the time that Trump was elected. He has a base of 30-35% that's not going to move.
Right.
Because that is a full-throated endorsement of the worst of the worst. They don't care.
In his own words, if he stood on the street and shot somebody, these people would still support him. And I think that that's accurate at this point.
We've seen it. It hasn't changed.
Well, it is.
It hasn't changed at all.
Well, or said whatever he wanted to say and redacts it. Even the Supreme Court won't hold him accountable.
Right.
So I think that what we again need to, I'm just as frustrated with this as anybody else, that has the same mindset that we do. we just have to work every day to bring new people into the conversation,
right?
Because that's how we strengthen our power and our ability to make change. Is that 35%, 40%, whatever it is on any given day, we can't touch that. Mm-hmm. We can't do anything about that. Well, the only way that we make that number get smaller is make our number get bigger and make that a smaller percentage.
Right.
Hard number of those people won't change. That's the sad fact, and that's where we are.
So I guess here's the other part of it. Nathan and I were at a meeting yesterday, and it was almost as if they were thinking for the first time, like, what their plan's going to be, like, right, to actually do something. And these are people who are listening. These are the hardcore people that show up on an evening in a poorly air-conditioned room to talk about what's happening politically.
Okay.
And, you know, I would bet that 90% of those people haven't knocked on a door yet this season, right? Or hasn't made a phone call, or haven't registered a single damn voter. And here they are sitting in the room thinking that that's enough. So it's even our meetings, base, that's not enough.
Oh yeah,
it's
meetings
true.
Don't get us anywhere. You have to have a plan.
Yeah, you have to be in front of more than just
do the work.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just in front of the people who are already showing up at these things, then you're not getting any new voters out of that.
Right.
It's just
So how do we do it? Knock on doors, send text messages, send phone calls. There's a limit to how much, you know, social media sharing can do, but do it anyway, because if you can bring a couple more people some awareness, it can help.
So any final words on the Muslim ban in Sotomayor, or thoughts that you might have?
Just please, for the love of God, Anthony Kennedy, do not retire. That's my only thought.
And stay healthy.
Yeah, keep working out.
Everybody send Ruth Bader Ginsburg a fruit basket. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I like that. We should start a GoFundMe for her personal trainer to make sure that he has, like, all the luxuries so that he can keep doing all this work.
Lie.
Keep her working out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's my only thought.
Wow.
I have nothing else.
My main takeaway from all of these things is just to have discussions with people who you're interacting with on a daily basis about some complicated issues that might make you guys uncomfortable.
Yeah. I know how to talk to people.
Right.
We all do sitting at the table. We all know how to talk to people. But sometimes, I mean, getting in the weeds with this, it's like, you know, to really get to the root of it, when it's so easy for someone to just say, nope, no, it's not.
Right.
Or, you know, it's just, you know, like we're trying to really, you know, to get people, or we're trying to really open up minds where the other side is just trying to close them and hit them with the biggest stick possible.
When I'm talking to people, the main thing that I do is I try to understand where they're coming from. You talked a little bit about intent before we even started the show.
Yeah.
Most people aren't intending to be bad people. They want a good country as well. They just have a different vision of how it's going to happen, or they've outsourced that thinking to somebody else, and then they just say,
good.
However my party decides, I've decided that these guys have the best interests of the country in mind, so I'm just going to subscribe to whatever they say. When we have these discussions, it doesn't help us at all to say, oh, you're being bamboozled, they're manipulating you. It doesn't help you to say that, oh, you're the enemy.
Right.
You have to understand.
You don't gain any ground there.
You have to understand where they're coming from, and then have the conversation on their terms, because, like you say all the time, Dwayne, progressive values are American values, and we can have these discussions from a conservative bend, and we can still win, because nobody wants an American that excludes people based on religion. Like, when you're talking about this...
See, I don't know if that's true. You see, that's what I'm getting at. Like,
I don't know.
I mean, I've knocked on enough doors where there is a... Like, what about that 30%?
Yeah, but I think there are a lot of people who may ascribe to certain ways of thinking who wouldn't ascribe to that thing.
Right. Mm. And a lot of times people think that they have to take the totality of something if they subscribe to one part of it. When you're told that security includes excluding people of certain religious backgrounds, and then you say that you want to exclude those people, you're not endorsing that idea in your mind. You're just saying, oh, I like the idea of a secure America.
Yeah, it's again motivated by fear.
Yeah.
And a lack of understanding.
Tribalism.
Yes.
You're just subscribing to what the tribe believes.
Well, that's a whole other discussion.
I know, that could be a whole talk.
Gosh.
But that's my main thing.
Part two. No, just kidding.
Tune in next time. Well, with that being said, then, thank you for tuning in with us today. And we are Lights in the Night. We are hope for our future. And we are not alone. We are Lightning Bug.